welcome back to Vertical Families. Thankful to have you guys listening today. I am really excited about today's topic, but not as excited as I am to be joined by my co-host, my mother-in-law.
And it's another weekend visit. Don't you love it?
I do. Glad to have you here. So today, I'm really excited about this topic.
This is a good one. We were talking about it even before we started recording today.
Mm-hmm. So the title is going to be the Role of the Church Family.
When I saw this topic, I'll tell you the first thing that came to my mind, you know, I was a classroom teacher for years, mm-hmm. and one year they bought the entire school staff these big buttons to wear to remind us all that it takes a village to raise a child. And that's what came to mind when I saw the role of the church family in parenting.
Yeah, that's good. I have a lot of personal experience in this because I grew up in a very small church, and my dad was the pastor, and so I kind of lived at the church.
Yeah.
But I was thinking about it this week, just kind of looking over this topic, and there's a guy's, two men's name, one was John and one is Jim. Now, it sounds like I'm changing the names, like some standard names, but they really were. It was John and Jim, was their names. I thought when I was young that these were the meanest guys in the world, because anytime I would run in the auditorium, they'd let me know. Or if I'd go get a cup of water out of a water fountain to throw on my sister, they'd let me know not to do that. And they were always standing there to stop me from doing it. But then as I got older, as a teenager, and I'd do some stupid stuff, they were always there to kind of guide me in the right direction. When I got married, they were there. When I graduated, they were there. They just became part of my life.
Yeah.
Right?
Just part from childhood on, and they didn't leave you.
No.
When you hit that awkward teenage years, they stayed.
Yeah. They did. Yeah, and they were, and looking back on it now, they were doing a lot to kind of mold and shape me spiritually and into a man that I didn't even see. I remember at a young age, they started letting me be like a greeter at the door. They let me take the offering. This is a lot of little things around church. And I thought they really needed me when I was like 8, 9 years old. It's like, I'm an important person. They need me to do this. Now come to find out, being on the other side, it's easier to do it without the 8 or 9 year old trying to help you count the number of people there on a Sunday morning.
Yeah, I laugh because my husband is the greeter at our church.
Yeah.
Another very small little church. And I've watched as he grabs some of those 8 or 9 year old boys and lets them help him. And the way he has to awkwardly reach around them sometimes to get the door open and greet someone. Yeah. But I think it's so important.
It is. Yeah. And the cool thing is, like, they're not going to forget, right? So when that boy becomes a teenager or he starts making a decision on who he's going to marry, your husband's going to have some insight and some thoughts that he can give into him, speak into his life, right?
Yeah.
If you don't develop that at a young age, you never get that opportunity. So
And I think, as I think about our It Takes a Village, and you're talking about Jim and John as a kid, that when we talk about the role of the church in parenting, I see it as a support network for parents. This parenting task is not an easy job.
No, it's tough. Yeah. You don't get an instruction manual, right?
I know. I mean, the Bible's our instruction manual, and it doesn't have a chapter that just said, this is how you parent.
Right.
You have to really dig in and figure out, how am I supposed to parent?
Well, I remember when we brought our first one home from the hospital, I didn't know anything about kids. And so we bring her home, and I thought the kids just sleep all night. Like, no one ever told me that when you bring a baby home, be prepared to be up at night.
Yeah.
So I was thankful we had some other people at church that could kind of give me some advice on this, some practical things.
Advice, and hopefully maybe come and spend a night or two so you can get some sleep.
Yeah, brought over some dinners and different things. So
No, I think the Bible is clear that parenting is, like, you're the primary discipler. You're the primary discipline hander out or whatever term. But you shouldn't have to go it alone.
Yeah.
That church family is there to come alongside you and support you in those things that you're doing, as Jim and John and others we've seen have done. I think, though, we need to take care to hear that word support.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not the church's job to do the disciplining
or
the discipling, but they're the support system for us.
Yeah, I think that's good to point out. Like, at Villa, where I pastor, we say that a lot, that as a parent, you're the primary person that's discipling your kids. Like, we'd say to the fathers, if there's a father in the picture, like, you're responsible for the discipleship of your family. Now, as a church, we want to come alongside you.
Right.
We want to help, but the kids are here a couple hours a week at church. They're with you, you know, all week. So it falls on you as being primary. But yeah, the church is, we're definitely here to support. And I think you need the church. If you're going to disciple your family well, you need to be in a local church.
Well, I do too, and I think all we have to do is look back. Sometimes we look at the Old Testament and we think, well, that was Old Testament. That doesn't apply to us anymore. But that passage that we use all the time, Deuteronomy 6, I know when I speak at grandparenting conferences and family conferences, they go to this Deuteronomy 6 a lot. But if you read the context, God was charging the entire nation of Israel to teach the children. He didn't just say parents teach the children. And so, you know, now in this day, the people of God, the church, we have that responsibility. It's We are to be that support network.
Yeah.
Coming alongside those parents.
Yeah. And I know you mentioned something with the New Testament about all the times one another's is there. Is
that we've looked at that a few times. But even if you just pull out a few of the one another's, be devoted to one another, bear one another's burdens. Mm-hmm. You know, if we're living out these one another's for the parents in our church, you know, we're coming alongside and we're helping them. We're not letting them go it alone.
Yeah. We take that Galatians 6 where it talks about bear one another's burdens. And, and there's a lot of ways to look at it. But one of those is if you have a new mom and dad at the church and they're not sleeping at night, you know, and maybe financially one of them, they're struggling. They just have a lot of stress going on. Mm-hmm. They have some burdens. It's nice we don't look at those practical burdens like, hey, this is a burden as a church we need to help pick up the pieces on.
Yeah.
So how can we help support them during this time?
And I think that's wise. And sometimes we just need to step back and look at that. It's easy to quote the one another's.
Mm-hmm.
Or to look at, you know, the Galatians, the Acts models. But we need to sit down and look, whether it's a group of people every once in a while just laying out a plan or whatever it is. What does that look like practically for a church today to come along and support? And I love you bringing out the new parent part. Most couples enter that new parenthood with that glowy-eyed.
Right. Everything's going to be great.
This baby's going to bring so much joy into our home and everything's going to be wonderful. And no one's told them they're not going to sleep. Yeah. Or that the baby's going to cry a lot and need to be fed every 3 hours or whatever it is. And so just those practical things of, you know, the church breaking up the tasks and delivering meals or putting groceries on the doorstep or providing that sleep, whether it's I'll come take the baby for a couple of hours while you get a nap or I'll take that baby all night and I'll get up every 2 hours because tomorrow night I can sleep. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think even what we've seen at our church, we have a lot of younger families. But especially when someone's struggling with like a postpartum depression and starting to go down that path.
That's a tough one.
It is. But I've seen other ladies who've went through that themselves to step up and, you know, speak in their lives like, hey, you need to go see a doctor. How can I help you? And just walking that path with them.
And sometimes it's hard. Sometimes I think we who've been there, we look back and sometimes it's easy to go, I'm reading too much into this or they're not really going to want my help. But especially if they're dealing with those things like postpartum and things, they need somebody to step up and be brave enough to say, I see this and I'm willing to help. You know, I'll make that doctor's appointment for you or watch the baby while you go and you need this.
Yeah. And you need that. A lot of times people start having children. It's like, okay, I need to get to church now that I have kids.
Mm-hmm.
But you need that connection before it happens.
Yes.
Right. So if I'm going to speak into your life, that you're struggling with something, we have to know each other before that. I just can't come up to you and be like, hey, it looks like you're really struggling here. You need to fix that. But if we've been friends for months or years, we have that relationship.
Yeah, and I go back to the beginning when you were talking about Jim and John and you being a little kid, like they were already building that in, that relationship with you. And you might not have seen it when you were 6 or 7 being reprimanded for running in an auditorium. But as that relationship continued and continued, then it was already solid by the time you needed desperately for them to speak in and help.
Yeah, I did. And they became my best friends, right? I know they were more mentors and things, but I remember like going to prom, like both those guys were at my house wanting to see me off before I went. I mean, it's
that's the sweet part. Yeah. There can be friendships between generations.
Yeah.
And I don't think we stop to see that anymore. Mm-hmm. We see the old people, the young people, the middle generation, and that connection in between gets lost.
Yeah. I don't know if this is the direction we want to go today, but I was thinking about this as well. It kind of brought it up. You know, in Acts, it talks about that they were in each other's houses and they're always there. So the kids would have had an active part in the worship or at least been around. They weren't put in another part of the building in children's ministry where they never interacted with the church.
Well, it's funny you bring Acts up because the two things I think of when I think about the church helping support is that Deuteronomy passage where we've all been charged with the duty and that Acts example of the early church. Our churches don't look the same as they did in Acts, but those principles are still there.
Yeah.
Like they didn't take the kids and shove them off in a separate room or put them outside. They mingled and they interacted. And even if the kids weren't actively participating in a discussion, they were there hearing it.
Yeah.
They were within earshot. And I think it's important that we remember that. And in our churches, include the kids as much as we can. We can't always.
Right.
But when we can, let them be part of the service, the meal afterwards, and not just physically.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy sometimes to invite them in and go, we're going to include the kids
in
what we're doing. But I mean, actually include them. Sit down and talk to them. Get down eye to eye with them.
Yeah.
and start talking to them so you can start that Jim and John kind of relationship with them.
Yeah. A couple weeks ago, I had one of my favorite conversations at church I've had in years. It was after church, and there was two boys. One was about 5 or 6, and the other one's about 4. And they were sitting on this, like, we have steps to go up to our platform. And they were sitting there after church, probably for about 10 minutes, just talking to each other. So I'm in the back shaking hands and things. Finally, I thought, that conversation looks way more interesting than anything I'm talking about here. So I walk up there and just sit next to them, and just started talking. They were filling me in on Minecraft,
okay,
which I'm really not very familiar with.
I know the name because I have grandsons, but yeah. I don't know anything about it.
So I heard all about Minecraft. And I was talking to someone afterwards, and they were asking me if I'm an expert on Minecraft. And I was like, well, not yet, but I'm hoping that I have a relationship with those boys like a Jim and John had with me so that I can speak in their lives when they're 14 and 15 and maybe doing something really stupid. I'd be like, hey, guys, I've been your friend for a while now, you know.
But I think that's the sweet part. It's including them, talking with them, and talking about what's important to them. It's the small talk where you get to build that relationship and learn about them, and then eventually get the opportunity to share part of your story with them as that relationship starts to build.
Yeah, I agree. We're always on the parents, like, take your kids to church, take your kids to church. But I think then we also need to look at the church and say, hey, these parents are bringing their kids to church. What are you doing?
Absolutely.
Are you investing in them? Are you kneeling down and talking to them? Those type of things, right?
It's so easy to kind of scoot past those kids in the hallway or, you know, kind of dismiss those bus kids back there like they're so rude. It's maybe they are rude, but they're going to continue to be rude if we don't start talking to them and including them and making them feel welcome where they are. And I think I like what you said about building the relationship beforehand with those young kids, but not just the young kid. Like, look at the generations of people in your church and reach out to all of them, whether it's the little kids, the teenagers, those college kids that are starting to think about dating or they're engaged. Like, start building those relationships with them, all of them now.
Yeah. I think the kids should see, you know, the church as, hey, this is my church. I'm not some future version of this church.
Right.
This is my church right now. Mm-hmm. And I think it's on us as adults to be proactive to make them feel that way.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think also building those individual relationships with the children, but also supporting your children's ministry. Because there are times where it's better to have the children learning on their own level.
Yeah.
It's kind of that bathwater thing. You don't want to... They need a balance. They need to be part of the church, and they need to be learning from the elders, but they also need to be getting the Bible knowledge at their own level. And so support that children's ministry, whether it's money, time, talent. If you can teach, go teach. If you can't, go sit and hold little whoever, Sammy, that's squirming all over the place and disrupting. Like, just snuggle up beside him and be that presence to help the other kids learn and to help him learn what it looks like to sit and listen.
Yeah. Yeah, I know there's a lot of thoughts on children's ministry. Some people have some strong opinions on should the kids always be in the church or in children's ministry. I was a children's pastor for 6 years, and so we did kids' church and things, and I loved it. As a kid, when I went to seminary my first year, I felt like I knew everything. And I'm not the—I mean, you know I'm not the smartest around.
Would never say that.
I know you wouldn't say it, but when I went to seminary, I was like, man, I know everything. And until we got to, like, Greek and Hebrew. But before
that's
that,
a little tougher.
No one taught me that in kids' ministry. But it's because we had this lady, Miss Betty, who taught kids' church when I was kindergarten through sixth grade. And she made sure that we covered everything in the Bible, kindergarten through sixth grade. So I'd had it all, right? And this instilled in me constantly. So I knew all the stories. But I think about her who invested, to me, it seemed like she was just having a lot of fun and wanted to do it. I'm sure there's days she didn't want to show up and teach snotty-nosed kids like myself. But she did it year after year, and now we have ministries because of that.
Right. So I'm like you. I know there's proponents and opponents on both sides heartily, but my feeling is they need a mix.
Yeah, I agree. And when you're investing in kids, like, you're making an impact for when you're in heaven.
Right.
Right. So we're going to, probably you closer than I am.
Thank you very much.
to getting there. But
thanks.
But I couldn't imagine living without my mother-in-law, so I don't know. But we're going to be in heaven, and our kids, grandkids, or kids in the church we invested in, they're still going to be ministering in that local church and across the globe, making a difference for the kingdom.
It's the way to make the most important investment in that kingdom work is to invest in others and not forget, as we're investing in those kids, we want the church to hear that the kids are important and they need our time, but so do their parents.
Yeah.
and make sure that we're the support system for the whole family unit. Because some of our parents in the churches, it's easy for us to look around and see these young families who have obviously made the effort to get up on Sunday morning and get the kids dressed and get here. And we just think, oh, you know, they've got it all together and they know how important the church is. They're here. But I think sometimes we lose sight of the fact that maybe they didn't grow up in a Christian home and this is all new to them. Or they don't have a family unit, like a biological family unit nearby, so they don't have the support as they're asking questions and they're learning. And so we as the church, you know, we have an important role to play with those parents as well.
Yeah. I think so much just letting them know you're proud of them too. Yeah. Like, hey, we see what you're doing, what you're going through. I think about it every week when, you know, I get here early and we have musicians that come. So a lot of times they won't bring their kids early, but then I'll later see their spouse, the mom or dad that's coming in here with three or four kids or just one kid. But they've been struggling because their spouse is already here serving at the church. Right. And so now they had to get a kid up early by themselves and they're trying to drag them in here. And they could just watch at home on the live stream, but they drag them in here to church.
Yeah, and I think that's important for us to realize that today, after COVID, it's so easy for these parents to just say, hey, it's too much work, it's too hard, I'll stay home. I think it's good for us to acknowledge, whether it's an encouraging word, a pat on the back, some kind of affirmation, hey, I notice that you see how important being at church is, having your kids at church, that you've made this effort to get here. Mm-hmm. I even think we had this one young mom for years whose husband was not a believer. And every Sunday morning she got up and got the kids ready, drug them in.
Yeah.
And she was always late. But you just had to look at her, you know, she may be late, but she's here and he's not at home encouraging her to be here.
Yeah.
And instead of going, you know, you're late every week, just to say, you know, I notice the effort you're putting into getting the kids here and getting here.
Yeah.
That's got to go a long way.
I'd be a little bit opposite that after COVID, if I'd had young kids, I'd be ready for the church doors to open back up.
I've met a few of them.
So I could show up, drop them off to the kids ministry, and go set it for a half hour or so with some peace. So.
It's true. We've actually got a grandma in our church that says that almost every Sunday.
Yeah.
I'm so glad COVID's over, and this is my hour.
Yep. Well, let's kind of start wrapping this up, but we have some practical ways. Some of them we've already hit, but just kind
of
go through the list.
We have talked about a few of them. Beyond that new parent thing, I think we gave some practical ideas on that. Just do life with other families, whether they're other families in your same season where you can share the struggles and the trials and the victories and the kids can play together. Reach out intergenerationally, too. It doesn't hurt for an older couple in the church to invite a younger family to come to dinner at their home or meet at the park.
Yeah. I taught on 1 Peter on Wednesday night just to a Bible study. There's a verse in there about show hospitality without grumbling.
Oh, it's the without grumbling tough? Part that's hard.
I've read that, you know, several times. And then this week I was just kind of thinking about it, getting ready. It's like, well, we show hospitality because there's times my wife's like, hey, we should have so-and-so over. I'm like, really? Do we have to?
Or as you're getting ready. You know, I've got to clean this up and I've got to do this.
It's like scripture news. Like, okay, I'm going to go ahead and say show hospitality, but do it without grumbling.
Yeah. So, yeah. Scripture knew we needed it.
Yes.
I think we mentioned teenagers before. Sometimes it's easy for us to turn the other way. They've hit that stage. They're awkward. They don't really know where they're going, what they're doing.
Yeah.
But that's the time they need us the most.
They do.
I think, you know, if we watch for that teenager that seems to be alone all the time or doesn't seem to have a family support system, maybe they're coming on their own.
Yeah.
Or even, you know, that deacon or that pastor's teenage kid, because sometimes they're overlooked as they've got to have it all together because they're the deacon's kid. Or, you know, spot a kid, pray, ask the Holy Spirit which child, and maybe schedule monthly pizza dates or coffee dates or something to start that relationship with them.
Yeah, my youngest, she's in junior high, and she gets together, I don't know if it's monthly or a couple times a month, with an older lady here at the church. She thinks it's the greatest hour of her life.
Yeah,
I mean, she looks forward to it.
But it's what you said, you know, about young kids thinking they're needed and important when you let them pass an offering plate or open a door. It's the same for teenagers.
Yeah, it is. And then I think even, so you mentioned teenagers, you know, when you see that teenager sitting in the back row by themselves on their phone all the time, instead of just complaining about them constantly, why not go up and sit next to them and start a conversation?
Yeah, start that conversation. And after a few conversations, you know, maybe you can invite them to come sit with you and move them out of that back row comfort. There's a lot of just practical little things that almost all start with going up and saying hello.
Yeah.
and then some kind of invite or conversation.
It's really being intentional, right? It's
yes.
Like, okay, we can say we're a family-centered church where we care about families. It takes a village, but then are you being intentional with your actions and what you're doing?
So, right. Yeah. You're sitting at that dinner, you know, that church-wide dinner or picnic, and all the kids are off at a separate table. Just noticing, be intentional, and get up and walk over there. Sit right down in the middle of them. Start talking to them.
Yep. All right. So what's the next practical suggestion?
Well, we talked about building the friendships with the parents in the church, regardless of the age of their children. Mm-hmm. You know, don't think one group has it all together and the other doesn't, or they have to have kids the same age as your kids. You learn better from different seasons.
You do. And sometimes, you know, if you have a younger family, they may not have their biological family support close.
Right.
They may transplant to the area. They don't have grandparents. So, you know, the kid at school has Grandparents Day and their grandparents live hundreds of miles away.
Right.
You know, so be that grandparent and step in.
Be the grandparent. Again, we've mentioned single parents
coming
into the church that either they're widowed or spouse isn't a believer.
Mm-hmm.
Be the support for that child. Yeah. Just like showing up on Grandparents Day.
Yeah.
They're divorced or widowed and they don't have that other spouse in the home. Fill that void on those special days. Go watch baseball and soccer games.
Yeah.
And cheer that child on.
Man, kids love it when you show up at a game.
I know.
Right?
You're here. You're here.
Yeah, they do. They do. I think you also listed praying for the children and families in your church as well.
And there's another one. We need to keep our minds open. It's easy to think, oh, this child needs my prayers, but so do their parents.
Mm-hmm.
Both the parents and the child are fighting the same spiritual battle.
Yeah.
Satan's after both of them. They both need wisdom. They both need help. So just maybe in your mind, adopt a family that you're going to pray for very intentionally and deliberately over the year. And make sure you're lifting up parents as they're trying to raise those children and the children as they're walking through some pretty rough cultural terrain these days.
Definitely. Yeah. I think kind of wrapping this up, but what this does also is it shows those on the outside what a faithful community looks like and really shares the gospel with others because they look in and they see, okay, what makes all these people love each other? They don't look like each other. They come from different backgrounds, different socioeconomic levels, different generations, yet they're all there working together for a common cause, helping each other, supporting each other financially at times, loving each other. They're showing up at this kid's baseball game they don't even hardly know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an opportunity to share the gospel. Like, hey, we do this because the blood of Christ unites us.
Right? Yeah, so. I like that thought because sometimes we get tunnel vision. You know, I'm doing this so this child sees the love of Christ. So this child sees what a church community should look like. So this child sees what it looks like to live the one another's. But it goes beyond that child, the whole church community seeing it, but so's the outside world.
They are, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and your kids growing up, they see it, right? Church is important to mom and dad. They're taking us here every week, and they see the importance of it. And but, you know, I just thought about this. The kids also see what you miss church for.
Yes.
Like, they begin to see, okay, this is worth missing church for.
Right.
So I know we didn't talk much about that, but maybe another episode.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe. We'll add that to the list for another season.
All right. Well, this has been good today. Looking forward to recording our next one. Any parting wisdom you want to give today?
I can't think of any parting wisdom, but all I can say is thanks for joining us for this episode and look forward to the next one next week.